Here at the Pennsylvania Game Commission, our passion is wild. Tune in to our podcast, Call of the Outdoors, as we discuss all things related to wildlife, hunting, habitat, and conservation across the Keystone State. Hear from men and women who have a passion for the outdoors and who value and work to preserve our state's wildlife resources for current and future generations.
Hey, welcome back to Call of the Outdoors, Pennsylvania Game Commission's podcast. And let me tell you, we're in an exciting time of year right now. We're, we all wish for fall to get here, and it's going by so fast, but we're just on the cusp of, in my opinion, the best holiday ever, celebrating America's game bird, the wild turkey. We're right on the cusp of Thanksgiving. And here in Pennsylvania, it's such a time of year where you're just seeing people get so excited about it. But today, our special guest is our executive director, Mr. Brian Burhans, and we're going to talk about a whole lot of things going on here at the Game Commission. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
It is a pretty awesome time of year, isn't it?
Oh, it's my favorite.
Because of turkeys or because of?
Everything.
Everything, yeah. A lot of folks that don't know Brian is a turkey nut, just kind of like myself. And we like to get out there in the woods after everything, but those turkeys, they do have a special place in our heart.
They sure do.
Well, you know, we want to talk about a whole lot of stuff today, and it'll probably go in many different directions. But if you would, just so the folks that are listening out there, you know, kind of give them some stuff there, some ideas or just some happenings here at the Pennsylvania Game Commission.
I think, you know, look at yesterday. Sunday was a historic day, the first day in, what, over 200 years you could hunt on a Sunday. What an exciting time. I've talked to so many people, were texting me and social media and calling me. We're so excited to be able to actually hunt on that Sunday. I mean, that's a big, 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 big deal. So what an exciting time. You know, we have our next Sunday opportunity would be the opening weekend of bear, and then another season I am so much looking forward to is the opening of general rifle deer season. To have that Saturday and Sunday, just cannot wait.
You know, in my past life, I hunted all over the country and got to hunt Sundays. I remember the first time I ever hunted on a Sunday, I felt like I was doing something wrong because of being from Pennsylvania. But I personally got to go out yesterday, and just talking about it gives me goosebumps. I mean, we're here. It's happened. And, yeah, I mean, there's three of them, and the people that get to take advantage of them, like you said, it's special. It's really dang special.
It is. You know, for those of us, you know, have normal jobs and, you know, we just don't have the time. You know, we say, well, you could just take those days off and do your vacation days. Well, you know, work's important too and family's important too. And, you know, my family and my career come before hunting, to be quite frankly. And so that number three priority, hunting, I take the time when I can. But having that Sunday opportunity is so important for so many of us.
It is. And this one that hit in archery season, you know, we had that real mild weather the week before, you know, right there. And I really think the peak of the rut was this past weekend. And I know we got some rain in the afternoon, but that Sunday morning should have been awesome for a lot of people out there, seeing a lot of rut activity. And, you know, we have the extension that's happening here coming up this week for archery season. And we're just lucky here in Pennsylvania. A lot of folks don't realize how lucky we are.
Yeah, for some reason, this year hit me the hardest, you know, as I've lived from, you know, Florida, the Carolinas, Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, and it really hit me this season. I don't know why, but how lucky we are in Pennsylvania to have, you know, such amazing seasons. We have so many places to hunt, you know, with millions and millions of acres of game lands and state forest and Allegheny National Forest. There's so much opportunity in Pennsylvania. I mean, it truly is a hunter's paradise here in Pennsylvania, and really hit me again this year. You know, I never want to take Pennsylvania for granted because it is such a special, special place.
It is easy to take that for granted too, because I've done that myself. And you know, I look, social media has become so big, and I was looking at Facebook and people's success, and it charges you up. And I saw a buck yesterday that came from ANF, from Allegheny National Forest, that would challenge. Look at some of the bucks we're killing this year. Corey Galvis, you know, on public hunting ground, kill one that nets right now at 194. It's going to challenge our state record. Another buddy, you know, just west of there, sent me a picture last week, 188. Now, if you're measuring trophies, that's great, but we are harvesting some incredible animals that have birthdays, that have age. And, yeah. And you know, obviously when Gary Ault, way back when, you know, implemented the antler restriction to try to, for the health of our deer herd, the health of our deer herd is pretty good right now.
We got some big, big deer, you know, and those bigger deer aren't necessarily bigger antlers. It's bigger bodies, more of that good, wholesome venison for you to take home.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, a lot more backstrap on a 200-pounder than there is on a 100-pounder for sure. But anything else about, you know, what's happening here at the Game Commission? That you want to talk about, get out in the open, and there's some really cool things, I think, that are happening.
Absolutely. I mean, we're getting into it. This is, you know, I've never found the slow season here at Pennsylvania Game Commission. You would think June and July are slow, but they're not. But this is the really, really busy time. But it's the best time, you know. If you're a game warden, you're out there, you're talking to hunters, and that's, one of their favorite activities. And, a lot of things, habitat management, just a lot of things going on right now. So it's really, everybody's hopping and making it happen.
Yeah, and it's kind of a different year, obviously with what's going on around the country with the pandemic, and we don't want to go too much on that kind of thing. But, we're doing the best we can. We're out there, we're practicing every kind of precaution that we can, but we're out there in the middle of it every day of our lives. Even when we're in the office or we're out in the field, being outside, I think, is the healthiest way to live, if you ask me.
Yeah, amen to that.
Well, let's talk about something that's real special to all of us, not only at the Game Commission, but hunters and just outdoorsmen here in Pennsylvania, is firearm season. It's coming. It's on us. You'll start seeing orange everywhere. And, it's kind of funny. I look at some other states that open, and, they call it Orange Army and this and that. But you know what? Here in PA, it's such a tradition that I get excited when I start seeing people wear orange.
No, absolutely. And even this week is the week I'm going to be sighting in my rifle. Looking forward to the opener of the rifle deer season. So I'm going to get my rifle all ready to go, and I'm ready to get up there in the North Woods and see what I can find.
What is your deer rifle of choice?
It's a 35 Marlin.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an old rifle.
See, that's just Pennsylvania all over it right there. It lever action?
Yes.
Oh, nice. Yep. Nice. Kicks like a mule too, doesn't it?
It does.
But, we all look forward and anticipate, whatever our favorite seasons is, but we all probably share pretty much the same passion that we grew up deer hunting. Mm-hmm. I mean, whitetails here in Pennsylvania, at one time we had way over 1 million hunters. And, I'm proud to say that this year, 2020, we're pushing that number again. We're here in Pennsylvania, our license, our participation, our license sales are up this year quite a bit. And, we can blame it on a lot of things, but that's exciting to me. That's really exciting.
Absolutely. And you look at, we talk about the old days, What got us, probably, you and I have not talked about this, but what got me into hunting was small game hunting. Rabbits, and I grew up in hunting in the tail end of the time when we had wild pheasants in Pennsylvania as agriculture was changing the way they implemented or grew crops. And that's really what got me in. We had an early squirrel season this year. What a tremendous opportunity. It was so popular. I talked to so many hunters who took advantage of that early squirrel season. And we talk about whitetail deer, and it's a magnificent animal to hunt. Of course, we love the wild turkey. I don't think we should ever forget how important small game hunting is to getting people into hunting. And, if I had to choose between a good rabbit hunt with some beagles and a deer hunt, I'd probably go on the rabbit hunt. I really love rabbit hunting. And look at this year, we have managed dove fields on many of our game lands, and it was extremely popular. Got so many great comments from hunters. They had a great time. It's something that we continue to get better at as an agency of managing these managed dove fields. But the small game hunting opportunity is something as an agency we're really focused on in a lot of our game lands to try to have that opportunity. We released more pheasants this year than in quite a while. So in the popularity of pheasant hunting continues to increase in Pennsylvania. So it's just an amazing hunter's mecca here in the great state of Pennsylvania.
It is. There's so much going on. I forgot about back in September when we got to go out there and get in those managed dove fields and hunt doves. And, if you're out there and you have somebody that might be interested in hunting, those managed dove fields are pretty awesome to introduce somebody, because you're going to get some action. You're probably not going to hit too many of them if you're new, but you're going to smell gunpowder and have a lot of fun. And I think that our plan is in the future is to grow that program, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not an easy task, but, it's something that is so popular. I went out hunting it was the opening day, but I couldn't make it out till the afternoon. And I'm just in my regular hunting gear, and I'm just talking to hunters. And, and I got so many positive comments, how good a time they had. We had so much shooting. It was just a lot of fun. And, let's face it, all you need is something to sit on, couple boxes of shells and a shotgun. What a great way to take a mentor hunter, take advantage of the mentor license and you have that hunter sitting right next to them. You can monitor them. You can help them. You can mentor them. You can train them. What a great way to get out there and get in the field and have a great time and teach a new hunter how to hunt right there in a dove field. And for even us older hunters, you know, we love those dove fields because it's a lot of fast action. You know, granted, you have to get out there and hunt them the first couple of days because the doves wise up pretty quick and they spread out pretty fast after that. But, boy, those first couple of days of dove season are amazing.
How many boxes of shells did you shoot the first day?
I plead the Fifth Amendment on that one.
Well, I just wanted to know what your success rate is. I mean, you know, you're in the southern part of the world. If you shoot a limit with a box of shells, you're pretty awesome. I know I shot about a box and a half, and my kid shot two boxes, and we had two doves. So we were starving. We were starving that night. But on top of that, dove is a great way for hunters to realize the whole gamut.
Yeah.
Especially new hunters, from, you know, going out there, sitting, learning how to, you know, bring your gun up and not flare the doves, and learning how to lead and shoot, and then cleaning a dove and bringing it home and cooking it.
Absolutely.
There's nothing better, in my opinion, in the world than you know, bacon-wrapped dove breasts on the grill. It's pretty awesome and easy to get the full effect, like we talked about backstraps earlier. I mean, that's just the end result of a great deer hunt.
And we're working hard on our game land system, especially with the priority on small game, whether that's for release pheasants or for rabbits. You know, we have a number of big projects we're working on, for example, down at Blue Marsh, which is pretty much 5,000 acres of land that we're converting to native habitats, which actually support your rabbit population on a place that they weren't seeing rabbits. And now they're starting to see rabbits on there. So, you know, not to mention not only the game species that are on there, but all the multitude of non-game bird species, mammals that you see more of on some of these native managed habitats with fire and native grasses and, you know, early successional habitats, just a lot of diversity and, you know, just a great place to be. And, you know, as much as big game is a driver in conservation in Pennsylvania, because the white-tailed deer is the number one species to hunt, we can never take for granted how important small game hunting is to so many of us. And especially, you know, it's not like a newbie hunter should just focus on rabbits or squirrels because it's easy. No, it's a lot of fun. I'm an experienced hunter. I've been hunting all my whole life, but I'd still love going out and chasing rabbits. I love going squirrel hunting. I love going out dove hunting. It's just plain fun.
You said something in there, and I'm like I said, we're going to bounce back and forth, and I just want to reiterate this because it's a term that I hear a lot here, whether we're in, you know, to habitat management crews or biologists or whatever, is early successional habitat. Break that down a little bit for people like me that hear that word but really don't know what it means.
Well, I'll steal a bumper sticker from Rough Grouse Society and say baby trees need hugs too. So basically it's just your young force. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those young forests is what actually feeds the deer in the wintertime. You know, that's what the rough grouse needs for their habitat is early successional habitats. It's, you know, when you look at, for example, rabbits in more of an ag land or field, you know, those shrub lands are very important for rabbits for cover and things like that. So young forests, which are the most lacking habitat type in most of eastern United States, you know, especially as you move into the Appalachian Mountains, whether you're in the Carolinas or in Pennsylvania, those early successional young forests are the most lacking habitats that we have. Now, on game lands in within our game commission, you know, we put a high priority on forest management, and we do a lot of early successional habitat work on our game lands, so there's a lot of that habitat there.
I know I got to speak with Corey Galvis, the gentleman that shot that big buck up in Tioga County early archery season, and his family's personal friends of mine. Danny Galvis is a longtime friend, fellow turkey caller, and spends every day in the woods. And Corey made one statement. Now, he is a forester by trade. He works for DCNR. He said the only reason that we have these big deer right now is because we're cutting trees.
Mm-hmm.
And he said we're making that habitat. We're making that the thickets where they're living, the winter food, like you said. He said if we wouldn't be cutting trees, we wouldn't be seeing all these deer all over social media. And he's right. And you know, to take it a step further, we as hunters, sometimes we don't realize that we are conservationists. And it's funny because we had Corey Brossman, who is a television host, and you know, lots of folks, and I always ask him, what does conservation mean to you? And a lot of them are stumbled by that. And conservation is a big word. And a lot of our hunters don't realize that they're conservationists. If you, you know, take it a step further, if you would, on conservation and what roles hunters really play.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the definition of conservation, it's the wise use of our natural resources. It's not, which is different from, say, protectionism, where you don't use it at all. So conservation, by definition, is the wise use of our natural resources. But taking conservation to that next step and where hunters fit into that is, you know, you can't just step back and say, well, Mother Nature's going to do her thing, because we as humans have really stopped Mother Nature in so many ways from operating as she did. For example, fires were a normal occurrence here in the state of Pennsylvania, and at the turn of the century, you know, fire protection became a number one priority for obvious reasons, and it was shut down. So we shut off many of the natural forces that used to shape our forests. You know, we have oak forests here today because of past forest management, both fires and, you know, all the timber harvest that happened at one time here in Pennsylvania and every other state here in the East. But, you know, it takes management if we want to provide the diversity of habitat, so the different types of species that we want to see on our lands. It takes active management. And if you look at our, whether you're game lands or any lands, if you look at, you know, with all the marketing, you look at the Outdoor Channel and all these other TV shows, what's the number one thing you'll think? If you just watched hunting shows on TV, you would think, all I got to do is plant a food plot, sit in a deer stand, and get my big buck.
Sit in a clover field with a box blind and a heater and, you know, look at your telephone. That's what
exactly.
That's what you think.
And I'm all for the heater. I think the heater is a genius idea. But when you look at actual how habitat management occurs, over 95-99% of actual habitat work for any species, white-tailed deer or whatnot, is actually forest management. Is timber harvest is how we create the habitats out there on the ground. We use other tools. We use prescribed fire. We deal with invasive species, whether they're chemical treatments or other treatments that work to keep those invasive species, the plant species, at bay. So there's a number of techniques that we use, but when it comes down to it, timber management is the number one tool that we use to create those wildlife habitats. You know, and you'll often hear, well, we need to put more food plots in. Well, there's nothing wrong with food plots. I've planted many myself. They're a lot of fun, but I call them more deer hunter interaction zones. You know, it's a place to go put a stand and, you know, maybe the deer will come in there and feed.
It's a kill plot. I mean, let's just be honest. Yeah. I mean, your past life, when you worked at the NWTF, National Wild Turkey Federation, you've sold more chufas in the lower part of the United States than anybody in this world.
Yep.
And same thing. I mean, there is some health benefits, but those people that planted chufas, they brought turkeys onto their place.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if it would work in Pennsylvania, I probably would plant chufa here in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Just we're too far north for it. If I had private lands, I would plant food plots. There's nothing wrong with food plots. But we got to understand that if we're really looking at broad perspective of managing habitats, forestry is the number one way in which we manage habitats on a landscape scale. You look at any map of any hunter. I've done this many, many times, whether you're in the Carolinas or here in Pennsylvania, and you ask them to point out your food plots on your land. It's usually less than 0.5% of their landscape is in food plots. Well, you're ignoring 99.5% of your habitats. You're ignoring them completely unless you're doing active forest management. That's really the way you have impact on wildlife.
Yeah, if you were lucky enough to own 100 or 50 acres or whatever, 10 acres.
Yeah.
If you put an acre food plot on it, you'd be a lot better. You'd be even more beneficial to yourself to go make an acre clear cut.
Yeah, absolutely.
And me personally, you know, my whole dream has always been to own some land, and I have a very small piece, but that's what I'm looking at right now, is to try to create some thickets and some mm-hmm. some young forest and trying to get that diversity out there. And you know, one thing here in Pennsylvania that we're lucky at the Game Commission, you know, we have some folks that work on private land side of things, and we're going to try to grow that program to give you some tools to get out there and to benefit wildlife on your property. And, you know, as we learned marketing, we're still 3, 4, 5 people deep right now. We're growing this bureau, but we interact so much with a lot of other bureaus, and we learn something every day that we're there, if not 10 things that just blow our minds. And you know, one thing that we've learned with through the, you know, Pete Shop, through habitat management, is that when you put a plan together, it's really cool to watch it work and to watch it grow. And we see it on game lands, we see it on private lands, and when that plan comes to fruition, it really makes a difference.
It does, absolutely.
And that's something to talk about, the old days of deer hunting. And you know, where a lot of people go to that same stump, that same tree they've been going to since 1975. And we hear it a lot, like, man, there's no deer left because you're going to the same tree. Well, there's a reason that there's no deer by that tree anymore, and a lot of it has to do with what we're just talking about.
Yeah, exactly that. You got to go where the deer are. You know, as President Fox, or Commissioner President right now, says, you can't spread them like peanut butter. You know, deer are, you know, I always say that to people when I go turkey hunting. Like I said, I can tell you exactly where these turkeys are going to be as soon as we find them.
That's right.
Until then, you know, it's anybody's. And that's the fun part about hunting. You know, you got to put the work in. You got to put the shoe leather in and find out where they're at and where they're, you know, and there are a lot of places that they're not. It's just hunting. That's just the way it is.
It's called hunting. It's funny that, and I'm going back here to Corey Galva's conversation, and I really want to get Corey on to tell the story about his buck, because it would not only give you chills, it brought tears to my eyes. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, but he went in as a forester and found where there was mast crop in the area that he was hunting early in the season, went and surveyed these oak flats and figured out, because this year most of the state's experiencing, you know, mast crop that's very scattered. And he found a red oak flat that had, you know, acorns, and used it to his advantage, that surveillance, when archery season came available. Yep. And he put the shoe leather in. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a mile and a half from where he parks his truck. It's a heavily hunted area, but he hunted it smart. And so many of us, again, we get out in the woods and we have our favorite tree. I've been down this road, and you go out there and hunt, and you don't know what's going on around you.
Yeah.
And you don't know if there's oaks there. You don't know if there's what the deer or turkeys or, you know, turkeys this year. I'm sidewinding a little bit, but fall turkey hunting was a little tough because they were moving. They were on the move quite a bit.
Yeah, they were. They weren't as predictable necessarily. And although this year, you know, I had a lot of good luck this year, you know, had some really good breaks and had a great time and watched you and your dad and your daughter get their fall turkey, or at least I saw the photos you sent me. It was a fun year. But, you know, we say you got to put the shoe leather in, you got to do your scouting, and I'm going to violate that this year. I'll be quite honest with you. I'm so much looking for the opening of the rifle deer season for more traditional and reliving the old days reasons than that I expect to go out and get a deer. We have for the first time a Saturday and a Sunday available for rifle deer season. I'm so excited about that. I belong to a traditional deer camp, you know, in Union Center County area.
With an outhouse?
With an outhouse.
Yes.
No electricity.
That is.
It just a pot, you know, stove there for heat. And I'm really excited about it because I remember as a kid when I growing up and I'd go to deer camp and it was a lot of fun. And I do remember getting a deer up there, and I'm going to actually go to that same spot when I go up there. I haven't scouted. I don't expect to see any deer just because I haven't put the time into it. But I want to go up there and go relive that time from 35 years ago of what it was like. Because I can remember today, I actually did an article. It was my first article, a story I ever sold to a magazine in Pennsylvania Sportsman back in the 90s, I guess it was published. But I can remember sitting on that ridge, and what I remember is the sound of a John Deere two-cylinder tractor. If you've ever heard those old John Deere, those two cylinders, they have a very definitive sound, and I can remember hearing the rustling of the leaves, and I can remember that buck coming up the ridge and being able to harvest that deer. And I just want to go out there and just relive that moment in time. And you know, I don't expect to see any deer because I haven't scouted, but it doesn't take away my passion for wanting to get up there and take advantage of the opportunity.
Well, two things I like to say about that. First is the old John Deere. There's been lots of folks, especially in the springtime, that have been fooled by those old John Deeres that think they're grouse drumming.
Yep.
I mean,
that's what they sound like.
Exactly what they sound like. And the other thing is, as humans, we are predators. We're the only predator or animal that can reason. And there's a reason that something's calling you to go do that again. And it wouldn't surprise me if a big old buck doesn't walk by just because of that premonition that you have. And sometimes taking those gut feelings like that can work in your favor.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when you think that you've tried everything and you studied it and this and that, sometimes that gut feeling will pay off in big dividends for sure. But
one advantage I have this year too is looking at the deer research that the Game Commission does and our deer team do. I do know though where those bucks are more likely to hang out. Depending on the wind, they're going to be towards the tops of those ridges just over the side. So I know where to look a little bit more now. So I'm going to be spending a lot more time still hunting, pair of binoculars, taking my time, and I'm going to spend all day out there. And I'm going to relish every second of it.
And Chris Rosenberry was on not too long ago, and I asked him, I said, if you had one piece of advice, if somebody was really trying to shoot or, you know, get on the same ground with a big buck in rifle season, and he said there's one word, elevation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's through all their research that they've done. And, you know, there's nobody that's looked at more deer poop or radio collars or whatever, white-tailed deer, than our folks in wildlife management at the Game Commission. But when I look at the old days, it's kind of like when you said hunting all day. I remember my fondest memories are my granddad in his Woolrich, whether it was 80 degrees or 30 below zero, he wore the same red plaid Woolrich, but he'd hunt all day, daylight till dark, mm-hmm. no matter what, even till, you know, he passed when he was 84, and I got to hunt with him that last year, and I remember sitting there, like, he wouldn't go in. I mean, as cold as he was, or as warm as he was, or as tired as he was, he'd hunt all day. And there's something to be said about that, because it only takes about 30 seconds for your world to change in the deer woods. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But, you know, we all have our history. You said about small game. My dad, he was into turkeys more than any, you know, there's a couple guys around town that were really into turkeys, especially fall turkey hunting. And that's where I cut my teeth. That's where I learned, you know, obviously we hunted squirrels, we hunted deer, but when fall turkey came, that's when he took his vacation. And like you said earlier, this year he's 79, and I got to, just off a hernia surgery, 79 years old, had to trudge him up a mountain, and he got to shoot a turkey this fall. And it was pretty cool. It's pretty fun to watch that happen. And hopefully we can get him out and keep him warm enough to maybe see a buck here coming up here in gun season. But we all have those, that history, and we sit in the woods sometimes and relive it. And that's the cool thing about hunting. It's not about pulling the trigger. It's about playing our role in the future. Like for me, when I came to work for the Game Commission, I had the coolest jobs in the world. This is by far the coolest. I say it all the time. People get sick of hearing that, but I think we all need to leave it better than we found it. And if we all do that, as hunters, we're being the best conservationists that we can. And that kind of brings us to the next point. I think there's a lot of roles that hunters play in conservation that they don't even realize. And I know we've talked about a little bit, if you could just, you know, take that a step further as well.
Yeah, so we talked about the definition of conservation, but really we got to take it to that next step, is the role hunters play in conservation. And if I could probably sum up, I think the biggest role that hunters play is they take on responsibility. So what do I mean by that? Well, obviously knowing the rules and regulations and hunting safely and ethically. But it even goes beyond that. I mean, there are certain responsibilities that we have hunters have to take on to be truly conservationists, such as, you know, having that rifle sighted in and being confident with shooting that rifle and taking the shot when we're absolutely certain that we're going to take an ethical and clean shot at that animal, because we have to take that responsibility on, because it's an individual responsibility. You know, for example, where my deer camp is, I'm now in a disease management area. So this weekend I got on our online map and I looked where the drop-off container was, so I could, if I get a deer, I can drop it off and have it tested. So I have that responsibility as a hunter to not only provide my deer head for testing, but also making sure that I debone my deer and don't bring high-risk parts out of the disease management area. So that's a responsibility I take on as a hunter as well. But I think it's, you know, how we treat the animals, the measure of ethical treatment of the animals, how we present that to the public. You know, do we have a bloody deer head with blood coming out of its mouth and its tongue hanging out? And then we take that photograph and put it out on social media. You know, what kind of light does that put into hunters? You know, what about that ethical shot? You know, are we really trained to shoot at a running deer? Myself, I'm not. I will not take a shot at a running deer. But it really comes down to personal responsibility that we take, that I think sets up, goes beyond just the definition of conservation and makes us conservationists, because we have to live it, not only understand what it is and that our license dollars go put back into research and habitat management and the resource, but even well beyond that is how we act as hunters, how we recruit and bring new people into our hunting heritage, how we treat the animals that we harvest and the work we put into it.
And you know, again, a step farther than that, let's hit on Sunday hunting. You know, obviously we have a great start with the three Sundays for, you know, that archery Sunday, bear season, and firearms deer season. And as sportsmen out there, you know, what's one piece of advice we can give them if they want to see more of that opportunity? Because here at the Game Commission, we're in full support. And a lot of folks think that, you know, we're at the driver's seat in fifth gear on this. We're not. We need your help.
Yeah. If they, so Sunday hunting is done by the legislature. I mean, all the rules and regs that the agency has, there's a piece of legislation somewhere that dictates what our sideboards are, how, where the agency can operate. And Sunday hunting is one of those issues that is completely determined by the legislature. So if they want to see more opportunities for Sunday hunting, they need to contact their local senator and representative and let them know how they, that they support Sunday hunting.
Right. And I personally did a family survey about this one because it's way gray to me. I had no idea. And I've asked 20 members of my family if they've ever written their legislature about something they feel strong about. And all 20 of them have never done that, including myself. I've never done that. And the only way to get things done, you know, in a we have to present it in a positive light, is to be proactive and take that action. Yeah. And I encourage anybody that loved the opportunity that is, you know, totally for college age kids, you know, this year's a different year. They're going to get the experience they haven't had in a long time with the Saturday opener and the Sunday. You know, colleges are pulled back. You know, a lot of them are ending class November 20th before if they are away at school, and finals after that. So they have that weekend to go deer hunting, which they haven't had for a long time.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't reach out because they don't think anybody's going to listen to them, but nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, I know many members in the legislature that on a specific issue, they may personally disagree, but their constituents, the people that live in their area, say they want that so that they are their voice. So the legislature does listen. I mean, that's their job and they do a good job doing it. And they got to make a decision at the end of the day. And it's don't be surprised at how few comments it takes to shift perception of any issue that you're dealing with. So, you know, we should let our local representatives and senators know, you know, where we stand on issues that they want to hear from people. So they're very responsive and they do listen.
Squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, just do it in a very professional manner. I mean, these are, you know, in this job, I get to work with a lot of members in the legislature and they're wonderful people to work with. They're there for the right reasons. They want to do a good job, even as ugly and nasty as politics get. But they do a good job.
We promised we wouldn't talk about politics on this podcast.
That's right.
Well, let's go back. Let's talk a little bit about opening day. And you know, a lot of people think deer season's one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guilty of it. I remember when I first got to travel out of state and would miss opening day in Missouri or somewhere, and I'd be like, man, I miss deer season. Because it's ingrained in our blood in Pennsylvania that opening day is the only day to deer hunt. We got 2 weeks of season, including a Sunday. And, yeah, there's people out there in the woods the first day and moving deer and, you know, not normal things. But deer are going to be deer. They're going to live out there. And, yeah, they're going to shy away from pressure and you're going to have to get a little smarter. But we got 2 weeks to hunt them.
You know, the phenomenon behind an opening day is such a Pennsylvania unique phenomenon. I'll give you an example. When I lived in South Carolina, I remember going out first day of rifle deer season. I'm on National Forest. I'm driving down the road. And there's not a car to be seen.
That was August 15th, though, right?
No, I was in
northern part
October,
of the state. Okay.
Yeah. And I remember calling my wife at 5 in the morning. I said, can you look at the rule book? Is it open today? because the seasons in the Southeast typically are a lot longer, more liberal seasons and bag limits. And because there's not as many hunters there. You know, South Carolina may have, 240,000 hunters compared to Pennsylvania, which almost has 1 million. So it's apples and oranges. But we have such a phenomenon in Pennsylvania on this first day effect, you know, because the mentality or the thought process is if it's opening day of trout season, well, that's when there's the most trout that the Fish Commission just stocked. Or if it's opening day of rifle deer season, that's when there are the most bucks that are out there. You know, and there's something to be said about, yeah, they just stocked trout, so you're probably going to catch more trout. But you know, there's a lot of deer in the woods and a lot of deer that make it through the entire season. It's not like it was 25 years ago when over 80% of your bucks were killed. And a lot of them on the opening day. Where, you know, now it's not that way. We have still have a lot of bucks out there in the landscape at the end of the season.
And I know from my personal experience, when I stopped traveling and came back to my roots, which I mean I've got to hunt in the best whitetail places in the world, but there's nothing like a Pennsylvania whitetail hunt to me. And the second week of buck season can be phenomenal, especially you know if that 28 days after that initial, you know, rut and those does that didn't get covered. I've seen some incredible rut action late in the season that has been just like I was sitting there November 15th, you know, and it's never give up.
No, and the deer start to settle down towards the end of the
sure.
season. Even like my favorite time to hunt is actually in the flintlock season. The deer are far more relaxed. It's a fun hunt. It's colder, and I like that cold weather.
They're hungry.
They're looking for something to eat. They got to be on the move. But, you know, even when we talk about spring turkey hunting, you know, everybody wants to get out there that opening day because there are a lot of two-year-olds that are going to be very vocal, and they haven't been pressured by hunters. But
that's the only day to turkey hunt. Don't worry about the rest
of the season. We shouldn't tell them the secret. Okay, yeah, probably the second week's probably the best time when they're most vulnerable. But you didn't hear that. We'll have the engineer cut this part out.
Even late in the season in turkey season, when you think about like that Memorial Day when the hens are sitting.
I've taken more turkeys the second and last week than I have the first, you know, the opening, because there's so much pressure on that opening day as well. You know, I hunt a lot of public lands, and you know, I'm not going to mess somebody's hunt up. And there's been many days when there were just other people in there, so I didn't hunt. But those last 2 weeks, even up to the last day, I killed birds on the last day of the season. They are looking for hens.
Yeah, it's just like bucks, you know, and deer. I mean, instead of thinking about where they're going to get chased to and sitting in that thicket where somebody's going to move a deer, because that's been our mentality for years. I mean, I'm not saying that that's not the thing to do on opening day, but start opening it up a little bit and thinking about what deer are doing. Are they looking for something to eat? Are they looking for cover? Are they trying to find does? And when you really start doing that in gun season, kind of like you would in bow season, you can open up your hunting fun a lot more instead of just trying to find that escape route. Because that's how I grew up, is like, we got to get here because everybody's going to push these deer into this thicket. And then you start hunting that thicket and less people in the woods, and those deer aren't looking for cover. They're looking for food.
Yep.
You know, later in the season, all of a sudden, maybe those does that didn't get covered or younger does that are cycling for the first time, all of a sudden those big bucks know it. And, you know, if you get to where they're at, you're going to have fun. And I know there's a lot of people that are upset. Not a lot. There's some people that are upset. They've gone to camp and had this tradition for years and years and years about the Saturday opener. The bottom line is, opening day isn't the only day of deer season. Yeah. And, it's fun in that anticipation. But think about the rest of the season as well.
Yeah, look at my camp. They're not opening the camp officially until Sunday. We can still go up there and hunt. And there's some of the younger guys and mid-career guys and guys that aren't retired. We'll be up there hunting because that's the time we have. And, you know, some of our retired hunters, they'd rather be there starting that Monday, which is fine. There's deer still there. They'll have a good hunt. But I think really it comes down to, we just need to take advantage of the opportunities that we have, because not all of us can structure our work and family schedules to mesh up with when we can want to go out and hunt. You know, if all you can get out is the last 2 days of the deer season, my gosh, get out there and hunt and relish every second of it, because those are the opportunities that are presented to them. We can't always dictate our schedules 100%. I mean, I can't. Most people I know can't. But it's tough. It's tough finding that time.
If you can only get out for an hour or two,
get out there and get it.
Think about the best situation you can put yourself in. That's the thing about hunting. That's, you know, it's not just pulling the trigger. But if you can really use intel, you can use technology, you can use our brains to put yourself in the best positions. That's what it's all about. It's that guessing game. It's that chess match you play out there.
Yeah. And it's a game with yourself. I'm not competing against you for a deer. Mm-mm. I'm competing against myself is, can I figure out how to get that deer, find that deer? You know, am I going to put the miles on to cover the ground, to give myself a realistic chance? And that's, I think, the fun thing about, you know, why people play golf or why people hunt, because it's a game against yourself and a quarry, in this case, the white-tailed deer or the wild turkey, whatever you happen to be hunting. But just get out there and have fun with it.
Now, in Pennsylvania, there is a lot of competitive nature when it comes to hunters. But one thing that I think is important, if your neighbor shoots a nice buck and maybe you had your sight set on it all year or something, you've been getting trail camera pictures, whatever, go over there and shake his hand or her hand. And be proud. Be proud that they're a hunter as well. No matter what, we need to congratulate our fellow hunter, whether it's a giant trophy, a doe, or small 6-point. It doesn't matter what. We're all on the same team, and we all of us, hunters, the game commission, anybody that wants to see this thing go forward, kind of what we want to talk about, passing it on, we got to play in the same sandbox. We're on the same team. Everybody makes mistakes once in a while. We're on the same team, and we got to treat it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk about taking somebody and getting others involved in hunting. Probably, I think, when we talk about conservation and the role of responsibility a hunter takes on, passing on that heritage should be a top priority for all of us. You know, I have a brother. I've been trying to get him out in the deer woods, and, you know, he's got young family and a very busy career, and it's tough getting him out there. But I continue to keep that door open for him and other people that I find that are new and getting them out in the woods, you know, that's our obligation. That's our responsibility as hunters to secure the future of hunting, is to make sure that we try to replace ourselves. I would even argue, don't replace just yourself, replace more than that, and get people exposed to this wonderful heritage we call hunting, and how lucky are we to be out there. We see things as hunters that nobody else gets to see. I mean, we are so privileged to have a front row seat to see things that people don't. The smells, the sounds, the sights, the things that we see are just, you know, those are the memories that stay with me my whole life.
Yeah, you're having fun out there.
Yeah.
No matter what. The other day, my favorite little songbird, just because of its name, the tufted titmouse, flew up by me when I was bow hunting. And they, I don't know, but I think they come when the colder weather comes down. And all of a sudden, I was covered up with them. And you get enamored into just those. I mean, I'm got a whole new respect for bird watchers and things like that, because you learn a lot.
And there's always a chickadee a few in there too. Yeah. And it's so much fun.
And that's what it is. It's about having fun. I mean, when it even comes down to sitting on a rock and eating a ham sandwich at lunchtime, that's part of deer hunting that's really fun. And no matter what, enjoy it and have fun out there.
Yeah, when I look back at some of my most fondest memories of hunting, it's usually not the animal I harvested. It's that great horned owl that came in response to my owl calls while I was trying to get a turkey to gobble, and he sat in the tree above me.
Let's hear your owl call, by the way.
Ooh, 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 ooh. Hey, I'm getting ready.
Yeah, you even look like an owl when you did that.
Or that red fox or gray fox that came through the woods while I was sitting in my deer stand. Or, you know, I watched once a sharp-shinned hawk, you know, dive after a bird and nail a bird in a briar bush. It, you know, those are the things that I'll take to my grave as something that is a treasure to me, is those kind of memories.
Absolutely, and that's what it's all about. And let's, you know, before we get into the last little bit before we're in here, but let's talk about being safe out there. It's real important. And, you know, one thing that we can say here in Pennsylvania and probably around the country is that hunter safety, hunter education is working, because we're seeing the results when it comes back from things. But we all got to have it in the back of our mind that safety's first.
Absolutely.
And what are some of the tips that you have out there about being safe?
You know, obviously, you're going to wear your hunter orange during the big game seasons. But hunter orange isn't, I don't think, why we have such a great safety record in Pennsylvania. I really think our safety record is directly reflected to the quality hunter education that the agency provides and the hunter trapper education instructors that are volunteers out there providing that instruction. That knowledge is what keeps people safe. And again, as a conservationist, you take on the responsibility to be a safe hunter. You know what's beyond your target. You know without any hesitation, with absolute certainty, is that is the species that I'm harvesting. It's not another person or nobody else is in danger. I'm not hunting in a safety zone, or if I am, I have permission. So safety is really about having the knowledge of how to hunt safe and then practicing that when you're out there doing the activity. And our hunters do a remarkable job. We have a great safety record here in Pennsylvania.
Right. If you're getting off the ground, from the bottom step up, you know, make sure you're attached to the tree.
Absolutely.
Of people hunting out of tree
safety
stands.
Belts and tree stands, that's where a lot of people are getting hurt, and there's no reason for it.
Right. The other thing, this is just a guess, and it's always been kind of my thoughts. Folks that use a lever action like yourself, very popular firearm here in Pennsylvania, whether it's a Winchester 94 30-30 or a Marlin like you shoot, wait till it's about daylight to load that gun and let that hammer down. Because I think a lot of those shots that you hear it hour before daylight are people letting the hammer down on those lever action guns, and it's accidental discharge. You know, in just like turkey hunting, I used to get out of the truck and load my shotgun right away. I don't load my shotgun until I'm sitting down by the tree. There's no rush to get your gun loaded.
Exactly. I do the same thing. I was with doing some fall hunting this year, and had a hunter I was with, you know, every time I got out of the car, he loaded his gun. I said, look, you don't need to load your gun. In fact, I would recommend you don't load your gun. Just load up when you're ready to set up. You know, it's not that the gun's dangerous, but every step, anything you can take to make it safer, there's nothing wrong with that.
Your fall turkey hunting is a little different than a lot of them. I mean, Brian, for a lot of folks that don't know, Brian is a turkey dogger, and there's a special breed of dog that from the state of Virginia, and we can go in depth a little bit because it is kind of cool, that's actually taught to go out and break turkeys up. See, when I grew up, I was a turkey dog. I was the guy that they go up there on that mountain and make a circle and see if you can find something. But talk about Tucker a little bit, because he is your pride and joy.
Yeah, he's called a Bern Appalachian turkey dog. He's a mixture of a pointer, setter, and a plot hound. And basically with their job, they range out 150, 200 yards. And they're looking for either turkeys or a really fresh sign where they can follow and find the flock, you know. So, you know, they'll go out and they'll find the birds, and then they bark and break them up and get you good spread. And then the dog comes back to you, and then you basically go to the break spot, set up, and call the birds back in. Now, technically, the dog is supposed to sit in a bag or under a blanket or be camouflaged, so obviously the birds don't see the dog. We're still working on that. So one thing I learned about, you know, you really don't train these dogs because they know what to do. I mean, they're demons when it comes to turkeys. They love finding them. But what I did find out, you do have to train them to sit still and get in the bag. So, you know, certain things like breaking up turkeys, hogging up the bed, sleeping on your lap all the time, those are inherent in those dogs. They know what to do. When it comes to sitting in a bag, he wants nothing of that. So we're working on that.
Yeah, and he Tucker's still a puppy. And JT Byrne is a friend of mine. And every Byrne dog that goes out there, from what I understand, is they want it to be a part of your family.
Yeah.
And it's – I mean, everybody has – that has animals and dogs, they love them, and but those turkey dogs are something different. I mean, Scott Bayshore and the folks that I know that have turkey dogs, they're more like children than any pet I've ever seen in my life.
They absolutely are.
Yeah. Yep. And it's a neat sport, and it is cool. Lots of folks out there in PA, which I realized but didn't realize, even like in dove season, we went to that dove field in the North Central, and seven or eight people had their dogs with them, mm-hmm. you know, to retrieve the doves, and there's way more people than I ever realized that are really into the dog side of hunting. Look at our pheasants. I mean, I'm seeing and hearing so many positive things about the pheasant situation this year in 2020, and people having some great hunts and just enjoying it. I ran into Rich Palmer in the hallway the other day, and we talked about it. He's training a new pup, and mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so cool what we have here in this state. It's in our blood, mm-hmm. and when you look at the surrounding states and you look at states around the country, they look up to Pennsylvania. And, you know, like I said, this last Saturday was monumental for us with the opening of Sundays. It gives me goosebumps to talk about it because we're here, we're there. Yeah. We've made it. And lots of folks have made that happen. It's not, you know, just the game commissioner or anything like that. There's sportsmen are being heard out there. And I think it's, like we said earlier, it's important to keep that press on, to keep that pressure out there and being the best conservationists that we can. And I'm talking way too much. Brian, what do you see in your vision in the immediate future here at the Game Commission? Anything cool and exciting?
Well, I think, you know, with the new licensing system coming next year, I'm looking for some dramatic advances there. There's areas that we continue to work on as far as making these licenses easier to get. You know, the commissioners are looking at setting up a system where we can get our antlerless licenses a lot easier, but again, that's determined by the legislature as well. As far as, you know, can you go to Walmart and get your antlerless license? There's a way to do it. We have the capability to do it. It's just, you know, would it be allowed to do? So there's a lot of things we can do from a customer service standpoint there that, you know, that'll make things easier for hunters. And, you know, all the work you guys in the Bureau of Marketing and Strategic Communications of getting the word out and educating people about the opportunities, where to go, how to do things. You know, we need to look at hunting not only through the eyes of a seasoned hunter, but through the eyes of the hunter that wants to become a hunter. You know, there are so many things we take for granted because we spend our whole lives doing it. But there's simple, basic things that new hunters need to understand, and to become hunters, they need that training. And that's one of our efforts as an agency, is to get more of that information out in the hands of new hunters so they know where to go and they know how to hunt and they know how to do these things, and they don't have to seem so intimidated by it, because it's, again, just a wonderful activity.
Right, and we want to hear from you. I mean, that's we learn more in marketing from just talking to folks out there. You know, good, bad, right, wrong, indifferent. We want to hear all these ideas, because no idea is a dumb idea. I mean, no matter what we look at, questions are questions. We want to hear them. And you know, we've been privy to see a lot of the GM comments coming through, and, you know, philosophies that people have. And it's neat to know what everybody out there, everybody's different. Mm-hmm. And everybody goes hunting for different reasons. But the bottom line is we are all conservationists, and we all need to leave it better for the next generation, and teach the next generation the technology and the things that we've learned through our lifetimes so they can take it a step farther. I think that's key to the future, because we're all on borrowed time down here. There's no doubt about it. But when you can make any hour, day, week, whatever, the best in the outdoors, there's nothing like it in the world.
And remember, to be a true conservationist means you have to take on responsibility. And that's what we need to do if we're going to grow this, continue to grow this heritage of hunting.
That's a great statement. With that, we're gonna probably cut her off because we're running out of time. But I'd like to wish everybody out there, and I'll let Brian take it out of here, but I'd like to wish everybody a good luck. Enjoy every day you get out there, but bottom line is have fun out there and enjoy it and send us the success pictures. Whether you're holding a deer or not, success is many things. You can just send us a picture of you out in the woods with your best hunting buddy. And if you send it to us on Facebook or, you know, through our website, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, get out there, enjoy the seasons, be safe, and remember to pass it on.
That's right. Thanks for coming on, Brian. Thanks for being such a great leader here at the Game Commission as well.
Thank you, Matt.
On behalf of the Pennsylvania Game Commission, thank you for tuning in. And we hope that every day of field is filled with memories to last a lifetime. We are committed to leave conservation and wildlife better for the future. And we hope you can tune in next time to the PGC's Call of the Outdoors.